Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Ohayou gozaimasu, konnichiwa, hello.
And Gozugoz.
Gomennasai, Nihongo hanasemasen.
In today's episode, we are talking about Grisaia Phantom Trigger the Animation, a movie released in two parts in 2019. I chose this one because it's a franchise that's being brought back as a series either this year or next, and I think we can force their hand by doing this podcast. Come on, winter anime season 23-24 for the new series of Grisaia Phantom Trigger the Animation.
Yes, I stand by this motion.
It was produced by Bibury Animation Studios, the studio which was created to make this, because this was the first thing they made, and has gone on to make Azur Lane, the animation, The Quintessential Quintuplets 2, yes, the second season, not the first, and two shows which are airing this year, Magical Destroyers and The 100 Girlfriends Who Really, 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 Really Love You.
My favorite!
That's not started yet. Magical Destroyers is like two, three episodes in. And some other stuff, as well as the upcoming new Grisaia Phantom Trigger the Animation series. Grisaia Phantom Trigger the Animation currently has a My Anime List score of 6.91.
Blasphemy. Oh wait, sorry, that's at the end of the show. Never mind, sorry.
Spoilers. Might as well pack in the podcast now.
Oh, well, you know,
thanks for listening, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Did the Peruvians listen to this one too? Ciao.
This movie is based on the visual novel series by Front Wing, which is a bigger spin-off of the Fruit of Grisaia visual novels, since there are now eight of them, and there's only three of the others. And some side story spin-off things. Anyway, my synopsis for this is when the new teacher of the Social Ops Research and Development Class A gets kidnapped, oh, murder will suffice.
I really like yours. Oh my god, can I just not say mine and copy yours?
No.
Accompany a group of young assassins, who would formerly be known as the Phantom Triggers, on two separate cases where they could get to show off their skills.
Okay, goes.
In the world of Grisaia Phantom Trigger, the Triggers do not exist. And so the Japanese government has to use cute girls to kill people. Cute ropes, panty shots, violence, blood, and social commentary.
Nice. Right, the first part of the movie, because as I said, it was released in two parts for some reason. We open on a chase through a crowded festival, intercut with smash cutting to Rina beating on someone. Because at this point we didn't know their names. My note says, Ninja is chasing a man, but because she's so short, he gets away. I forgot to replace Ninja with Murasaki Ikoma, who we'll get into their jobs shortly. He's being tracked by CCTV, and she's routed towards him by the person in the chair, which we find out is... I'm not going to use their full name, it's Chris. Not... No, their full name isn't Chris, I mean...
Christopher.
It's not short for... A sniper, who we find out is Toka Shisigawa, is keeping an eye on him and is told to shoot him non-fatally. She takes the shot and apologizes for hitting him, quote, in the vitals, which in this instance means she blew his head off. Rina then reports that she's killed all of her targets and everyone is mad at everyone else for not keeping anyone alive. And we get the title. We open back on Rina and Toka in the garden. Breakfast is being prepared by Chris, and she tells the other two to go and wake Murasaki, who immediately falls out of bed, though none of them seem bothered. Toka reminds Rina that they're getting a new homeroom teacher, and we cut to the school where that teacher has just arrived. Coincidence.
Well, maybe that happened a couple of hours ago, or later. They didn't specify it's happening exactly at the same time.
Well, I just assume everything's happening in a sequential event. The teacher's name is Shiori Arisaka, and she walks in on two people practicing kendo and interrupts, allowing the blindfolded and deafened one to get a hit. It turns out that Arisaka doesn't have the job yet and is there for an interview. Luckily, the two that she interrupted were the principal, Ichiru Sengoku. I don't think I use that name more than twice in the rest of the synopsis. The principal is the one who got hit. Her partner was a student, Haruto Aoi. And no, I'm not saying oi as in oi you over there.
Yes.
Damn it. Haruto gives Arisaka a tour of Mihama Academy and explains things to her since she doesn't say anything about the school. And she's a little surprised to discover that this is a school for assassins.
Just really imagine getting a job and being like, oh, I'm so excited to teach a couple of teenagers. Haha, it's like, if you piss me off, I will shoot your head off.
Well, she didn't have the job when she turned up, not knowing anything about the school. Why would you go to a job interview and not do your research? Come on.
I know, it's like, Jesus Christ, just think, woman.
That's job interview 101. You look up the company.
That's how you end up working for Nintendo by accident. It's horrible.
Did she look up the company and she got the FBI page that is classified or something?
Well, then you wouldn't go to the job interview.
No, you would assume that your Wi-Fi is faulty.
They knock on the door of the principal's office and are told to enter. And I say that because Ichiru is there in lingerie as they enter, and she officially welcomes Shiori. Being apparently normal, Shiori freaks out and tells Ichiru to get some clothes on. And I apologize because for the rest of my notes, I refer to her not as Shiori, but as Arisaka. So forget that I said Shiori a couple of times.
Oh my god, they're the same person?
Yes. Shortly after that, Haruto is explaining that CIRS, spelled C-I-R-S, does wet work for the government, and while they used to be secret, now they have a school. Arisaka is put in charge of Class A, the Social Ops Research and Development, or SWORD, just without the silent W, class, which takes on private sector contracts. More specifically, she's in charge of the core curriculum and keeping an eye on their mental health.
I'm personally and secretly glad that SWORD was not written with dots in between, because otherwise I'd have to deal with you spelling every letter.
Yeah. She introduces herself to the class, and we finally get everyone's names. Rina Fukami, the shooter. Toka Shisigawa, sniper. Sakurako, Christina Chris, the person in the chair. Murasaki Ikoma, the ninja, Russian ninja. And that's everyone in the class, but not all the characters we're going to meet throughout this thing.
But she's not Russian. That was a joke.
But she is clearly a ninja, so I tend to believe the fact she said she was Russian.
Yes, because ninjas never lie. That's a good point.
Okay. But she does talk. She does speak Russian. Not very well.
You win this.
But that comes later. After introductions, we cut to sometime later, hours, days, we don't know, where Arisaka is sat in what appears to be Haruto's office. Not sure the class rep needs an office, but okay. He takes her to the firing range where they meet Izumi Yamamoto, the rangemaster. Reina glumps Haruto, and we see a close-up of her breasts rubbing against his back before he throws her off.
Are we just getting notified that Haruto is just like, I'm about 19 years old?
Well, I didn't write that down, but we can talk about that.
That is such a weird thing to answer. I understand he doesn't remember his parents or his past, but it's like, oh, how old are you? Oh, I don't know, about 12. It's like, what? You either are or aren't.
I mean, he was honest. He's not sure. But when he said that, I started suspecting that he's actually an old man.
That would explain the office.
Well, he had to say that he's about 19, so we'd know he's over 18 because of sexual situations in this visual novel.
But wait, isn't Rina below 18?
I don't recall their ages only that one that Haruto says.
Yeah, I mean, how to forget Haruto's about 19 answer?
How old are you? Over 18, probably.
That's a great answer.
How old are you? I can have a beer. I can have this beer.
In which countries?
Damn it, I was hoping you wouldn't ask that.
Rina offers to give Arasaka a live demonstration of her shooting ability. So Izumi sets up targets with her Nintendo Game Boy Advance SP, CED 8000. And then Toka shows what she can do with a sniper rifle. There's not much happening in this entire scene. So we cut to the evening where Arasaka is sat on swings, wondering if she's cut out for this job. A man gives her a duffel bag and disappears, thinking he's dropped off some merchandise to a contact. The bag is full of guns, and just as she discovers this, a woman appears behind her. We cut to Haruto arriving at the group home just in time for Chris to get an alert on her phone. All SWORD personnel must report to the principal's office immediately. At the office, we're introduced to Vice Principal Nogami, who explains that Arasaka was abducted by a member of the Hitoyoshi gang. The group gets underway, and we cut to Arasaka's location to find her breasts tied to a pillar. Also the rest of her, but the camera focused on them first.
I was really excited to hear how you were going to talk about this scene.
The woman from before is discussing with her boss what they should do with Arasaka, but the boss has a bad feeling. Class A, outside, dispose of the guards and breach a wall. Rina bursting in, killing everyone except for the boss, Hitoyoshi, and unties Arasaka.
Well, it felt like even at double speed it was quite slow, I'm going to be honest with you.
It made me think that this is an adaptation of Rainbow Six Siege.
Although I felt like the fighting scenes were a bit slow. I really like the contrasting, all the characters are really cutesy and they're wearing uniforms, and then there's really gory blood, and it's just really dissonating. So it was quite interesting, and I quite liked how it made my brain feel and go, ah!
Yeah, I thought all of the action scenes were actually really good. I mean, the animation in general, I thought was really good, but the action scenes were planned really well, where everyone has something to do, and it felt authentic, believable, that they do this big operation together, and it wasn't too much over-the-top stuff.
Yeah, they almost had good chemistry.
Like a Mission Impossible.
Yeah, I agree. I did enjoy the action scenes throughout this. We'll go into more detail in the second one about one of the action scenes, but yeah, on the whole, they were well choreographed and presented. And outside, Haruto confronts Hitoyoshi and stabs him with a sword, so even he gets something to do.
Finally, the men do something. Gosh darn.
Damn. Dang it.
They go to a noodle bar and eat while Haruto explains where the title came from. Kids like Class A used to be called Phantom Children or Silent Triggers, and before that they were referred to as Phantom Triggers. So I'm not sure why he told us what they're called now and what they used to be called.
Well, it's for dramatic purposes, and because that's the final word in the entire episode. But aside from that, maybe he's like, oh, you might know them as Phantom Triggers. It's like, oh, no, wait, really? But with actual shock, not as much sarcasm.
Oh my god, I heard of Phantom Triggers.
You might know them as Grisaya Phantom Triggers.
Dun dun dun.
The credits kick in with 7 minutes left, which confused me. With I thought a good song, nice footage.
I quite liked it too, though. Aren't these credits aren't they used as the opening in the next one, or am I just crazy?
They were, yes. We come back to 6 more minutes of the first half of the movie in Class A's classroom. With 6 minutes left of the runtime, not 6 minutes worth of stuff happening. They were discussing whether Arasaka will be back due to what she saw them do last night. But she comes in apologizing for being late. Then we get the proper credits with instrumentals, which last 3 minutes due to the number of Kickstarter backers. The second part opens with Class A at the harbour, waiting for their escort target, Thomas Benedict, to arrive. He's in a coma, so obviously can't defend himself. It's two new characters, Vanilla and Oko Inagaki, twins from a different school, who are displeased when they're told that Benedict has disappeared. And then we get the titles, which was the end credits.
I was like, oh, we're done, and I stopped the anime here. Was there more?
We open back on a briefing where the Class A we know is being told about the missing VIP, and the other school is asking for help locating him. Yoruto goes to meet the person in charge of the operation at a diner. As it transpires, they already knew each other. While they talk, Rina and Choco butt heads, literally, over mutual dislike.
Friendly rivalry like Naruto and Sasuke, not so much dislike.
Yeah, true.
You could see it in their deranged smiles.
They were polite smiles, just they weren't happy about it. They get a lead on the vehicle which took Benedict away, and Class A go to investigate. They discover Benedict upon entering the house, and he's been murdered with his heart removed.
Werewolves.
It's always werewolves or Galarians.
Sometimes I regret the order in which we've watched things. Apparently the deputy director of SIRS is waiting for a donor heart, so someone had removed it to prevent the transplant. Maybe? I'm not entirely sure how it's supposed to read. The situation's confusing and not explained until much later.
I got the same, so don't worry, it's not you being stupid.
Class A are told to find the heart in the next 3 hours, so it's still viable. Murasaki Ikoma, the Russian ninja, had been told she wouldn't be required on the mission, and so is filled in over the phone and gives some information she's come across on her own. Because maybe she was told, no, you're not needed on this mission, and she took that to mean, okay, I'll go and do the mission on my own. The person who stole the heart was working for Russia's biggest crime boss, Alexei Nikolovich, because Alexei is on the list for a heart transplant too. Murasaki poses as the one selling the heart to gain entry to Alexei's complex, and we get a long camera focus on her butt.
Don't worry, she's about 19.
Like, give or take 5 years.
Since I don't speak Russian or Japanese, some of the joke about Murasaki's accent was lost on me, but I appreciated the gag.
Yeah, she's not actually speaking Russian, she's just speaking Japanese with an exaggerated Russian accent.
Oh.
And it's not even like proper Japanese, it's like potato Japanese. Like, if you put an English phrase into Google Translate, that's what she was speaking.
Okay, that's great.
She rolled her R's and whatnot. Not her ass. Not her...
Well, that too.
I mean, no, okay.
While Alexei's son is whining at her, his men get a call from the delivery team who have come under attack. The son orders Maki, his father's bodyguard, to help secure the heart against his men's better judgment, not for his safety, but because she's too destructive.
This is where they call her a rabid dog, right? And I was like, what?
Yes. We cut to Class A and the Inagaki twins at the transport vehicle. Hiruto reports that they've secured the heart and is told that someone is en route to transport it to the hospital. They arrive almost immediately. They hand over the heart and Rina follows the car, wants to make sure that it's all going well. Murasaki calls to tell them not to hand over the heart to anyone, though, as there is an unknown person involved in selling and reselling the heart. Rina then calls to say the heart has been handed over to someone on a motorbike, who appears to be Maki, and they give chase. And it doesn't make sense why Maki is too destructive to do this when she's like, yeah, shh, shh, give me the heart. Yeah, thanks, bye.
Not only that, but the one that seemed more destructive was just the one that was selling the heart. He gave the creepiest smile while shooting at Rina. Like, that will haunt my nightmares.
He was an alien.
He was a Galarian.
It was a werewolf?
Rena tackles Mackie, and they go flying off of a cliff, only to recognize each other as Six and Bucks before they land in a thicket. We cut to a flashback of Rena being found as a baby by some beggars, and she had an Oliver Twist childhood if he didn't go to an orphanage and went straight into petty thievery.
I mean, you had more of a Charlie in the Chocolate Factory backstory. Mine is the family.
Mikey is also living on the streets, and that's how they met. Nothing really happens in the flashback, but as they're given their future careers, prostitute and assassin, Rena wakes up. Mackie had woken first, so had a gun trained on her quote-unquote sister. She reveals that Rena was sold to the government, while she was sold to criminals. They have a shootout, both landing a hit on each other, and I really laughed at the line. As Mackie starts running away, Rena goes, "You gonna run away?" And Mackie replies, "'Cause I am, you jackass!"
I really loved their interactions. She was just... Mackie was just such an upright coward about it. And I was like, yes, I love it. But no, as we know, she's too destructive for this job, obviously.
Yeah, I'll mention it now, because it's not actually in my notes. But Mackie does say that... because she's such a poor aim, she carries a lot of bullets to, you know, cover a lot of ground. So if she unloads enough bullets, she's eventually going to hit whatever she's aiming at. So that might be where the destructive part of her biography comes from.
And that just became single-handedly my favorite quote in the entire thing. It's just like, I have bad aim, but I overcompensate with triple the bullets. It's like me with my writing. Wait,
I'm
GameGreen.com. Anyway, Chase ensures and Rena discards her phone, wanting to be the one who stops Mackie, so the others can't track her. We get another flashback before another shootout. It ends when Rena strips and uses her clothes as a decoy, getting the jump on Micah before they roll off of another cliff and into a stream. We cut back to the rest of Class A, who are certain that Rena will be alright, although the twins don't quite buy it. I meant to write down one of the lines, if someone shoots a bullet at her, she'll shoot 100 back. And if she doesn't have bullets, she'll throw 1,000 punches. Which kind of shows that Rena's the rabid dog out of the two of them.
Well, yeah, the direct quote was, if the enemy fires off 100 shots at us, she'll return 1,000. If she's out of ammo, she'll deal 1,000 punches. I really like it because afterwards she's like, don't go back until you've won. Losers don't get fed. It's like, Jesus Christ. this is very metal.
Back at the stream, the pair get into a fist fight, which is really quite brutal. Have you guys ever watched the John Carpenter movie They Live?
Yes.
There's a really brutal fight scene between Roddy Piper and Keith David, and this scene reminded me of that. The two just really hurting each other.
Yeah, this one went quite hard. Like, it looked really rough. Rena totally channeled her inner Ali.
You got, like, blood coming out of her eyes.
Yeah, both eyes.
Yeah, that was the creepiest part. It's like, I'm not sure if she's crying blood and just summoned, like, a demon or...
She got the Rocky Balboa injury.
Oh, she had to cut her eyes to make the swelling go down.
Yeah.
Well, Rena eventually wins and backtracks to the bike, where the rest of Class A are waiting, and she carries Micah back too. We're told that the person who sold the heart to both the deputy director and the Russian was the guy who gave them this mission, because he was afraid of budget cuts. That was just... weird to me. We cut to the principal's office where Haruto is told the heart was no longer viable. And I should think not, it was on Mackie. It was back through several falls.
Let's hope they didn't find out by trying to put it in. Oh, it's fully squashed. It's okay. Let's just put it in and pump it a little bit, see if it works.
I mean, by the time the fight finished, it was probably more like a jam in there and they would just pour it into the hall, in the heart hall. And see if it works.
Afterwards, Haruto goes to tell Rena off, who is heavily bandaged, for getting herself so badly injured, though he appreciates her winning. He hugs her and tells her that he feels useless standing on the sidelines and gets frustrated, feelings, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, how dare
hey
you.
Hey now, that was so sweet. How dare you?
That was the moment where we got vulnerability and could identify with our characters.
He finally gave her the 1 minute hug she wanted.
I actually meant to time that hug to see if it was a minute or if it went over a minute, and then I could complain about that, but
I'll let you know. Okay, went over the minute.
Aha, I knew it.
She actually likes the hugs. I knew it. Okay, well, it's going to 2 minutes now. What the hell?
So
false marketing.
She asks for a reward for her hard work. I thought that was the hug, but anyway, she asks for a little sister.
Which I was really glad she asked for that and not something else.
And not a baby, yeah.
Yeah. I was, honestly, after last week's anime, I was like, oh no.
We cut to a room where Maki is on the floor in a straitjacket. Haruto enters and tells her that Alexei is dead, died about the time of the big fight scene, and his son is on the run. Since she viewed herself as Alexei's property, she has nowhere to go. So he takes her up to the roof and returns her watch, which we get a flashback to her receiving as a gift from Alexei, which just seemed to be padding the runtime of this movie. He does say something along the lines of, you have to wind it and check the time on it every day. That's to make you appreciate the things that you don't have to keep winding and checking every day.
It's like, for that matter, I'll just take that time and do something with my life. Thank you.
We cut to the group home where Haruto and Maki arrive. Rina is, of course, overjoyed. Murasaki Ikoma, the Russian ninja, says that she was with Alexei when he died peacefully, and we finally see Arisaka for the first time since the end of the first part. Class A sit down for a meal and talk about Rina wanted to shoot a nuke with a pistol from space. And
who doesn't? I was really glad to see that no one said in space no one can hear you scream.
In space no one can hear you pull the trigger on a pistol.
In space, pistols probably don't work.
Now, you don't know.
I mean, the vacuum.
Why is there that meme of the astronaut with the gun pulled on the other astronaut saying it always was, huh?
I'm good.
See, he just got wrecked because there's memes about it.
Yeah. We get credits. And then more credits. There's a post-credits omake scene that wasn't subtitled. It's something about the first 5 Grisio Phantom Trigger games and how you can date all the girls, something like that. Oh, and to stop you guys from having a go at me, Thanatos. There, I mentioned the other character.
Yes! For the first like opening scene, I thought Thanatos was a sniper. And I was like, what a cool name for a sniper. Oh my god. And then I realized I was just a freaking idiot. Big surprise.
Yeah, serves you right.
Thanatos was this AI thing that they kept asking where Rina was, basically.
And I love how the AI was always like, I don't know, she's such an idiot. It's like, yeah, I get it.
No, seriously, she's an idiot, isn't she? I'm not crazy.
No, she does act like it. So, was this a good adaptation?
Yes.
Wow, of course he's sure about that.
Did you check out any gameplay, Hatsura?
I did, but one thing that I wasn't sure about is, like I was checking out the game, especially because it is now officially in my wish list, and I was like, wait... Who are we playing?
Yeah, you're playing as Haruto, but he doesn't have a voice or a face. Oh, well, I believe certain scenes do show a face, but it's a self-insert character. Not sure where the long blue hair comes from.
Well, that's to be Kaito from Vocaloid, obviously.
Yeah, I checked out gameplay of the first 2 games, and it's these 2 movies. 2 parts of 1 movie, whatever the heck it was, is a direct adaptation of the first 2 games.
I mean, it was just a great adaptation. I mean, It's more action filled because it's a visual novel, but what can I say? I thought it was quite good as an adaptation personally.
Well, there are action scenes, but as you say, visual novels, so they're not, you don't see them in motion.
This might be one of the best adaptations, I'd personally argue. I mean, I can see how it might be a little disappointing because there's like nothing changed. But at the same time, that we would complain about the opposite if they changed too much. So I think it's good.
Well, I'm never going to get around to playing these games. I did enjoy the story, so I... Is it Yata, Nani, or Ibaka Atora?
Yata for me, absolutely. This is probably one of my favorite animes we've watched so far.
And Gozo?
Yeah, it's a Yata. I think the quality is all over. It didn't completely work for me plot-wise, but if there was more, I'd want to check it out, because, yeah, it seemed really, really good. And, like, the balance between, like, anime tropiness and, like, the grounded stuff was good, I thought. It was believable, even though it had those tropes in it.
Yeah. It's a Yata from me as well. I'm really looking forward to the new series, which, of course, when it does air, we'll cover the first three episodes on this podcast.
Or all the episodes, right?
When is the series, like, in the timeline? Because isn't there, like, a movie that's a sequel to this one? To this OVA?
There is. I don't believe that there's enough information released about the series yet to be able to answer.
There's, like, if apparently Phantom Trigger is in the... It's, like, one of the later visual novels in this IP. So, again, it's a bit confusing where you should start and shit. Like, should I go back to, like, see what happened before? Is that the relevant or not? You know?
Are you asking if you should watch the anime series of The Fruit of Grisaia and the anime series of The Eden of Grisaia?
Yeah,
and all like the specials that. Before you... No, I'm pretty sure this is unrelated because it has different characters.
I mean, I'm just curious where this is in the timeline. Is it a prequel or what, you know?
The Wikipedia page is not the best. I imagine there's a wiki out there somewhere, because these games have been around since 2011 in Japan, 2013 on the PlayStation Portable and Vita. So I imagine the information is out there if you looked into it, but just not on Wikipedia, which with multiple series of anime and mangas and games, you'd think there'd be more than one page summarizing it.
Yep.
So does this deserve its My Animalist score of 6.91?
I felt it was actually quite low because you said this was the first animation that the company ever did, right?
Yes.
Like, this was really impressive for a first time and something that was crowdfunded. Like, I thought it was quite good. I don't know. Maybe it's because we haven't personally... Like, maybe it's because I haven't played the game, so I can only build off of the anime. But it was quite good to only have a 6.9.
Yeah, I agree. I'd definitely bump it up to an 8.
Yeah, definitely. Gorns, what about you?
Oh, yeah. I think it could have been higher.
Okay, that about brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for joining me, Arthur and Gorse.
Thank you so much for having us.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Grincast podcast. Until next time, game on.